Welcome back to Jay Lotus Learning How to Operate Radio Equipment. This is the Tuesday afternoon show of WGXC, WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM. You can live stream this program or any program at WGXC.org. This afternoon, I, Jay Lotus, have a guest, D. Keegan, who actually has a very different name than D, but for us English speakers, I think it's easier. Hi, D.
Hi, Jay Lotus. How
Hi.
Are you?
I'm very well. Welcome here.
Thank you.
Could you tell us how to pronounce your real first name?
It's Dimpna.
Dimpna.
Saint Dimpna is the patron saint now of Dublin. She's the patron saint of mentally challenged and prostitutes.
Oh,
thought you'd like that
wow,
one.
Wow, I do like that one.
She's and also known in Portugal, Waterford in Portugal.
Wow. So, and what prompted your family to name you after such a patron saint?
I don't know.
I guess maybe
but
if they
I deal
named
with,
you.
I deal with people that mentally challenged all along, all my life.
Oh, so they might have been recognizing your innate abilities. Oh. Well, that's really interesting, Dimpna. That's such an unusual name. Okay, Dee, so I invited you on here. I'm the guest host, and you are my guest. And I'm interested in so many of the things about you, and I'm sure that the listeners would like us to start somewhere. So let's start on a little bit of background. Aside from your name, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from?
Well, I come from Dublin, Ireland, South County Dublin, Tala. And I come from a family of five generations in the furniture trades. I had to serve my apprenticeship to my mother and she to her father and uncles and so forth. Her apprenticeship was 4 years and 3 year journeyman. I had my own business in Dublin. I had worked in your journeyman years, you go to different companies.
So how old were you when you decided to come to the States? I guess maybe that's not
that
a nice
question.
You don't ask
an Irish woman that.
What am I saying? My great-grandmother would shoot me.
Absolutely.
So, okay, I'm sorry
well,
I interrupted.
I come to the States was I was the advisor to the Irish Export Board on the sale of antiques. And they had a researcher here in New York who couldn't get any information. Because if you don't know anything about, if you don't collect something, nobody wants to talk to you. So they
really?
Asked, yeah, so the export board asked me to come in and pick up and do the research on 2 days' notice. So I had to, we don't do resumes in Ireland, Britain or Europe. Everything is with the government. So I had to get everything done. I had a passport but no visa. And then the Irish Apprenticeship Board put my resume together for me. I hopped on the plane on the Tuesday. They told me on Thursday over Easter, which Ireland shuts down for Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday in Easter.
Wow.
So I hopped on a plane and one of the people I had to interview was Sotheby's. I think she was the president at the time, Elaine Whitmire. And when she saw my resume, she said, we've just opened a restoration. We need a trainer. So you have the job if you want it.
Wow.
So I went back and said, unless you do A, B, C and D, I'm going to America. Guess what I did? That was in April. So they sent me out for another 2 months research. I had shipped stuff, furniture to Dallas, and it got damaged. They left it standing for 8 weeks in 110 degrees, and the whole thing was destroyed. So the export board said, look, go over, do the research for another 2 months. I went all over America, went to Dallas, and sorted out the furniture. Came back, and then came back out in December for an interview and joined Sotheby's as a trainer in the restoration department. And that's how I got D. The late John Stair couldn't pronounce Dimpna, so he christened me D.
So you're telling me that you went from studying under your mother, who studied under her father and uncles.
Yes, yeah. You had to be in the family to be in the trade. You could not. It was closed trades. The guild system had them closed.
Wow. So you couldn't have joined a different trade. You had do what your family had done for generations.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And what do you call that trade in Ireland?
Well, basically, I'm in the finishing line. And then you've cabinet makers, you've machinists. My son is a wood carver and cabinet maker. He served as apprentice to me. And then they specialised. In Ireland, I was the specialist for the Irish Apprenticeship Board. Anyone wanted to get in to do conservation and restoration of antiques had to spend their first year with me. My son had to spend his first year with Higginbottom because he was the trainer for carving, wood carving. And then he came back to me.
This is so interesting. Mm-hmm. We do not follow those lines.
No, they don't here. They don't have no understanding of an apprenticeship. Well, my mother and her brothers and her sister, they had to serve apprenticeship of, they had to do, I think it was 8 years and a 5-year journeyman. And so, I'd done 4 and a 3-year journeyman.
So what is the difference between an apprentice and a journeyman?
Apprentice is you're working with what we call a full hand, with a master. And they're training you for 4 years. And then you go to different shops to train in other aspects of your trade.
So in the beginning, you're with a master, and then...
Yeah, which was my mother.
After that, you kind of farm out and study with other masters?
The union will recommend where you go. You're all unionized.
Wow, that's one heck of an education.
The first one was Bagels in Moor Lane in Dublin, and I was the supervisor there at 18. Then I went to Frank Kenny's in Cabra, then went to Pi Radio in Dundrum, which I was a time and motion study expert there. I would do the stuff, test the time, and then I'd check all the other staff members, make sure they were doing it in the right time.
And so that led you to recognition? How were you discovered by Sotheby's?
As I said, they sent me out here, and they were one of the people I had to interview on the sale of antiques, on how they sell it through their auction gallery.
Oh, I see.
And see, when she saw my resume, she said, look, we're looking for a trainer for a restoration. Job is yours if you want to take. There it is.
So that's a big thing to be restoring and training in restoration for Sotheby's.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so did you already have a family at this time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my children were grown up. And my son came out. He came out and he worked at Sotheby's for a while.
Sorry, folks. Jay's still having trouble with buttons over here. So your son, can you say that again? I'm sorry.
My son came out. He joined me out here. He had finished his apprenticeship and he worked in Sotheby's for a couple of years.
And
he went back then to Germany to live.
To Germany. Mm-hmm. And so he continues to be...
He's back here. He's married here now.
And where do you currently reside, Dee?
In Hudson, on Columbia Street.
And is your son in Hudson as
no,
well?
No, he's in Livingston.
Livingston,
with Nicole,
so
and
Columbia
his
County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Must be nice to have more family.
Yes, and my daughter's living in my house in another apartment.
Oh, yay. So
she works with the county clerk, Holly Tanner, a great lady.
The county clerk of Columbia County.
County, yes.
Yes. Wow, that's wonderful that your family is here.
Yes.
And local.
But I have 42 cousins in Ireland.
And do you go to Ireland?
Yes,
often?
Just come back. Not often, but I just came back. I've been there for 10 days.
Anything you want to tell us about Ireland?
Food is fantastic. But you couldn't pay me to live back there again. It's crazy. Drivers, bicycles, It's such a tiny island, you know, and it's overcrowded at the moment.
Yeah, well, we're having more and more people in this beautiful world of ours. Could you talk a little bit more about restoration and what you did after Sotheby's?
Yeah, well, restoration is repairing and restoring antique furniture and repairing and restoring it in the same way it was made. Not to use modern stuff. I'm a French polisher. I'm a qualified French polisher, which is the art of applying shellac. And it is an organic finish, and it's healthy, it's non-toxic. But people here have no clue about it. They think French polishers is shine. No, it's, it can be anything. You can have any level of finish with it. But that's what the furniture was since 1730 in France. It was the Bernie Martin brothers and the father who discovered it. Who discovered it in China. It's been used in China for 5,000 years. It's in the Sanskrit writings.
Shellac.
Yes. Huh. And it's book droppings that's refined and put on alcohol. It was originally made on red wine.
Huh. And that's in France or in China?
In China, it was made with the same process, but in France, they used red wine. When they come back, they brought the finish back with them. And then from 1730 on, furniture in Europe and Britain and Ireland was all French polished.
So this is what you're telling me, is that restoration is fine art. It's
absolutely
an art form.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can't, there's some things you can't restore because you'll destroy the value. American furniture that had varnish on it and it cracks like crack on the crackling on an oil painting. Varnish never hardens and the oil dries out and it separates. And if you take that off an American piece, you've probably taken off $2 million worth of value off it. You don't do that. But everything in Ireland, Britain, Europe has all been restored because it stood on flagstone floors. There was humidity. There was all sorts of things. You know, so it's more likely to have been restored way back.
So if something has been originally treated with shellac, it's restorable.
Absolutely. It's absolutely. It can be restored.
How would someone know what to do with their own pieces that need restoration?
They need to talk to someone like me who knows about it, who knows what the finish is. Because in 1913, they developed a nitrocellulose, which is a sprayed-on lacquer. And that was used all through the 20s and 30s and 40s, and is still used today. But then in the 50s, they had a much more dangerous finish. It's polyester, like the old polyester slacks used to wear. That melted down. And you see all the cars and pianos coming in from Taiwan and that with the big high shiner from Italy. That's polyester. There's only two ways to get it off, with a blowtorch or a belt sander.
I mean, you that's funny and that's not
it's,
funny.
No, it's illegal to use it now. The only place I think uses it is Portugal.
So what is the name of your restoration company?
It's just Keegan's Art and Antiques. It's restoration appraisals.
And a local business.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Community Radio. This is WGXC Acra and 90.7 FM. You're here with Jay Lotus and Dee Keegan of Hudson, New York. And we are talking about the art of furniture restoration and how it's treated here in the States versus Ireland. And Dee has been telling us about shellac and what can be restored and what cannot. For further information on this, you could call 518-821-7995. And this show will be archived within the next few days at WGXC.org, thanks to our own Neva Wartell. And so, Dee, I'm looking forward here to going into some information about art and furniture appraisals. So what is your involvement in the appraisal aspect of the business?
Well, I'm an art and a furniture appraiser. I taught it in NYU. I was an adjunct professor there. I've been doing that for years, done it in Ireland. And it's important because there's a lot more to it. Quite often, the contents of your home is far more valuable than the building it's in. People have no idea what they have, how to handle it. They don't understand climate control. If you have silk in a room where there's moisture, the silk will rot. The leak cracks. There's all sorts of things like that. The biggest danger to your contents is your housekeeper or people around cleaning it and using all the wrong stuff to polish it and whatever, dust it.
So do you avail yourself or anyone with your company avail themselves to going out Are you hired to go to the home of an art owner and tell them how to treat the various art or furniture that they have?
Yes. I take care of collections. I do appraisals. I give advice on how to take care of it. Some time ago, I was called to do an appraisal on a steel man. It was a statue, full-size statue of a man, all in steel. They had it on the third floor of a building. Plus, they had a baby grand piano. You don't ever put anything that heavy, that high. You don't go higher than the second floor. And the lady that was in charge of it was the curator, and she didn't know.
And so I'm assuming you educated them on where to move these things.
Mm-hmm. They had to get a crane in to take it back out because it was dangerous. With the vibration walking on the floor, the boards would bounce and the thing would move and it got damaged. And it was very dangerous. It could topple over and take the piano out.
So what you're telling us is that there's a lot the average person or even a museum curator doesn't know about how to treat art and furniture.
Mm. Yeah, it's very important. And, you have an incident. How do they insure it? 90% of people have no clue how to insure it. They see the roadshow and they have a piece of furniture that looks like something on the roadshow and say it was valued at $10 million. The rain comes in. This happened to a gentleman in Connecticut. He had built a house and the propane system in the centre of the house went on fire. He had contacted the insurance company and put in a claim. The insurance company said, please go in and can you do that appraisal for us? So I go in, do the appraisal. He's talking to me. I told him, I can't talk to you. I work for the insurance company. I can't talk to you. So I done the whole appraisal, sent it to the insurance company. He hit the ceiling. He's on the phone screaming. A lacquered cabinet his grandmother paid $20,000 for in the 20s in China. And I think it was only $2,000. So I sent him to the insurance company. Can you please give me permission to talk to him and explain to him? So they send it back. Everything is done in writing. Everything is done in writing. So I go and see him. I show him there's your insurance form. Little box there says blanket. You tick that. He said, yeah. I said, even if it is worth $20 million, I said, you won't get the $20 million. You have to get an appraiser in, appraise the piece, value it, authenticate it, and then he has to insure it separately.
So for all of our listeners, what we're hearing is that there are specific, very important guidelines to follow with regards to insuring art and antique furniture, and that it might be a good idea to call an expert and get their advice prior to signing the insurance forms.
Absolutely, because it doesn't matter what it's worth. Once you tick that blanket box, you're done.
Well, Dee, we're going to take a little break. I thank you so much for this very valuable information. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. I am Jay Lotus, your Tuesday afternoon show at the Carnegie Room host. And my guest is Dee Keegan, who resides across the river in Columbia County. And part of the importance of this show and all of these shows is to showcase our community so that we all know who lives here and what is possible to do here. For instance, for state-of-the-art advice on arts and antiques, we don't have to go any farther than across the river to Hudson, and we do not need to work with people outside of our community. So I'm just so impressed by the gems that we have locally, and I am more and more interested in working with many people so that we can find out more about our community, what makes it special. You folks can go on WGXC.org to read a little bit of information about Dee Keegan. And Dee is here to share more with us about appraisals, what kind of appraisals what kind of appraisers to work with, when you need to get an appraisal, what can affect pricing. So, Dee, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's so good to have you here. It's
good to be here.
It's delightful. So, Dee, could you speak a little bit further about appraisers? And I don't know about the rest of you listeners, but I can represent myself in saying that a number of years ago, I looked to sell jewelry that I knew was valued at around $50,000. And I was offered $1,000, and the appraiser offered to buy the jewelry from me. And I said no. So can you speak to that a little bit, Dee?
Yes. When you do an appraisal, and an appraiser does the appraisal, they are not at any level to buy that furniture or make it, or whatever it is, jewelry, anything, make an offer. It's totally illegal. You can go to a shop and say, I want to sell this, how much would you give me for it? That's a different thing. But if you have an appraiser give you a price on it and tell you, well, it's only worth $100, and you know it's worth $500, but it doesn't make any odds. An appraiser cannot. It's totally illegal for an appraiser to make an offer to buy the property they have appraised. Full stop. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's it.
Hmm. That's really good to know.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally knew, hey, this isn't right, because I knew what it was worth when it was purchased. But for those of us who have family heirlooms, mm-hmm. and things that might have great value, we really don't know what they're worth.
That's right.
And we're trusting someone else.
Now, there's different levels of value. You have an auction value. Then you have wholesale value. Then you have retail value. And then you have the insurance value. Now, let's say at auction, it sells for $100. They'll wholesale it, we'll say, for $150. They'll retail it for $200 or $250. But then when it comes to insurance, it's replacement value. You may have paid
$250
for it, but what will it cost to replace it in a year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years' time if you have to replace it? So that's what your insurance appraisal is for, its replacement value.
Well, what if it's irreplaceable? What do we do about something that has been in a family for five generations? And
well, everything has a value. We have to come up as an appraiser. We have to come up with three comparables for every piece. I done an appraisal some time ago. It was all art. And I took 4,000 photographs. And as you can see, you have the list here. Every piece has to be numbered, it has to be photographed, it has to be described what it is, all of that, title, country it was made, materials it was made, measurements, art or maker, inscriptions, condition, provenance, estimated value, and then you have to go with three comparables, try and find three things that were sold at auction, wholesale, retail.
So, Dee, I'm curious, you would need an appraisal, or it's suggested to have an appraisal prior to buying the insurance. And the appraisal sounds like it's pretty involved. How would you know that you're working with the right appraiser? How do you shop appraisers?
Well, unfortunately, it's by recommendation.
So go with someone who a friend has worked with, or a family member.
Yeah. You know, you have a local auction gallery, and they're very good. So, you know, they can recommend it. But you talk to them. You will know by talking to them if they know what they're doing.
Okay.
Know what they're doing.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I'd like to know, and I think we'd all like to know, everybody's seen this antique roadshow.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak a little bit about the way that they value things, and what is the actual value? Is it what someone tells you something is worth, or is it what someone is willing to buy?
Yes.
And what is the difference?
The value basically is when more than one person wants to buy it. But it also is part of how rare it is, how famous it could be, who had it, or, you know, there's a lot of things that go to it. But I have found where furniture is concerned, quite often there's one or two people on the roadshow that mistake the furniture. They don't know the background to it. And it's important that you do know that. It's important. But I think it's just to give entertainment more than anything. It's because, once again, you have to have three conferences. You've got to research it. We can't do the roadshow. Actually, I was supposed to host it originally because I was an adjunct professor in NYU and they asked me to do it.
Oh, wow. So, and then what I got stopped to
know,
you?
Then I got to know the chap who'd done it and I found out why I didn't. But anyway, it's a long story.
Okay, that sounds like dangerous territory, yeah. So I think we will stay out of there. Can you talk about value and politics and value against time? I mean, how much does our current political situation affect the value of our belongings?
Everything affects the value. You have war, that affects the value. At the moment, dark brown furniture won't sell. You go back to when you have the Biedermeier was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And then you had art and crafts, and then you had Art Nouveau. But there was all wars around that time. Then you had Art Deco. Just after the First World War, Art Moderne, after the Second World War. It all affects the value. Taste changes all the time. Fashion changes all the time. The same applies to antiques and furniture and art. But there's some things, American furniture, American traditional 18th century furniture gets fascinating prices because it's rare. There's not that much of it. But you won't get that for European furniture. Philadelphia, 18th century, were all Dublin trained cabinet makers. Dublin furniture and Philadelphia furniture is almost identical. American furniture, a little stiffer. The Cadwallader chair was sold for $2.75 million in Sotheby's.
I would whistle, but I'd deafen everyone.
But if you had the same chair that was made in Ireland, which would be 20 years earlier, you wouldn't get anything like that. If you got 20, 30, 40,000 for it, you'd be lucky.
Is it because we Americans love what comes from America?
Absolutely. we you know, and it's rightfully so. It's rightfully so because there's so little of it. And it's our heritage as Americans. It's our heritage.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely rightfully so.
We're such a young country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about right now, no one will buy dark brown furniture. This is when you're talking about fashion.
Yes.
And styles.
Everything is like Art Deco period. It's bright. It's colorful. It's plain straight lines.
Or white.
Yeah. But even that, the shabby chic has gone out of fashion. So it's all colourful and steel, brass, and as you saw, all my furniture, Lucite.
Right. I saw your furniture and it was Lucite.
Uh-huh.
I thought of the 60s.
70s.
That was the 70s. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's been quite
my
a while.
Theory for that, if they spill anything on it, I don't have to refinish it.
So the finishing expert has furniture that she would never have to refinish.
But it can be embarrassing when you have people for dinner and they're playing footsie under the table and you can see them.
or fun and interesting. It's very, very avant-garde.
Mm-hmm.
So what else would you like to tell us about? I'm sorry, folks, I'm going away from the mic and closer to the mic. Dee, what else would you like to tell us with regards to appraising?
I think that one of the things is very important that when you have the contents of your house can be a lot more valuable than your building and taking care of it. One of the things we had in when I was in Sotheby's, when we'd be sent down to Florida to work in the major places down there, you'd go in and you'd look at the tabletop. And this would be probably $50,000-$100,000 table, 100 years old. And you would know they've used this spray polish. You do not use it. And you'd say to the housekeeper, what did you use? I don't know, you know. So you go to the laundry room and there it would be behind the detergent. You can't use that on antique furniture. It breaks up and slides, and it's like sandpaper. You have to nearly strip the whole top to get it off.
So what do you do if you have used spray polish?
You're going to need a professional to fix it for you.
It's hard to believe how much there is to take into consideration.
Yeah, the damage people do. Okay, one of the most important things is when the winter comes in, what do? You go in, turn up your heat.
Right.
Instantly you go from 0 to 70. Do you know what that does? Not just for your furniture, for your drapes, for everything in your house.
Right.
Summer comes, you lower it. It's knowing how to control the climate. You have to have humidity during the winter when it's all central heating. You have to know that because the first thing that will move is wood. It shrinks and it expands. It shrinks and it expands with moisture.
So you're saying that it should be kept more constant?
Yes, at least around 60 to 65 all year round.
All year round.
And winter, you must have humidity.
And
you have to have humidity in the room.
You're saying that what helps a human being to be healthy also helps furniture to stay.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's a very interesting concept. Dee, is there anything further that you want us to know? We only have a couple more minutes here.
The care of the contents, if you're going to get your contents insured for replacement value, have it appraised first. To make sure that you may have that one object that is worth $100,000 and you'll only get $1,500 for it if it's the blanket ticked.
So when, a lot of people don't get appraisals for things because they think it's going to be really expensive.
Yeah, well, it is, but it saves you in the long run.
Right.
Saves you in the long run.
So if they don't know what they have in their house, how would they find out? I mean, that's what the draw is with Antiques Roadshow, that people can learn what the value is.
Yeah, but it's not giving them the correct information. The Antique Roadshow doesn't give them the correct information. There's one little thing in it. In Europe, Ireland, Britain, Europe, we have a tiny little bug that's called woodworm.
Ooh.
That eats furniture. And once it's damp, it has a picnic. One gentleman on the thing said, oh, those little holes are powder post beetles. No, they're not. Powder post beetles are holes as big as the top of my finger. And they're indigenous to America. Woodworm is indigenous to the far side of the pond there. So that used to have to be treated, but probably will now. But you don't see much of it now, but years ago you did. And bring it across the river. Bring it across from the Atlantic. Whatever was in the seawater killed off the worms. It's a tiny little beetle. They lay a worm and it eats its way out.
Huh.
It's not much bigger than the head of a pin.
So it's important to know
because if you get that into your apartment, the rest of your furniture is going to go. They'll have a field day.
Very interesting. I'd like to repeat that I'm speaking, Jay Lotus here, speaking with Dee Keegan. If you have any questions for Dee, you can contact her at deekeegan1@aol.com or give a call to 518-821-7995 with any questions. And Dee, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank
this
you for
afternoon.
Having me. It's been a pleasure seeing you again.
It's really wonderful to see you, and I'm so grateful that you brought your expertise.
You're very welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.